I'm Marty Moscowain. On today's monthly edition of Battleground 2020, we look at the role Pennsylvania has played as a swing state. Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton in 2016 by less than 1% of the vote, giving him the state's coveted 20 electoral college votes and the presidency. Rural voters played a key role 4 years ago. We will check in on rural voters this year a bit later in the show. Also coming up, there have been a series of legal challenges about voting in Pennsylvania, and last week, the state Supreme Court made some important rulings, including one about naked ballots. We'll deconstruct those decisions and tell you what you need to know about casting your ballot. But we begin with this question: is Pennsylvania going to decide who wins the keys to the White House this year? A headline last week from the website 538 caught our eye: why Pennsylvania could decide the 2020 election. We asked Nathaniel Rakich, election analyst and author of the report, to join us and to explain. And Nathaniel Rakich, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
And you're joining us by Skype. Let me just read the very first sentence of the report that caught our eye. Right now, Pennsylvania looks like the single most important state of the 2020 election. Is there a short answer to that? Why we're this have this particular status?
I guess the answer would just be, Pennsylvania is a very populous state. It has, I believe, 20 electoral votes, and it's just very evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans. And that is a recipe for having this huge role for example, states like Florida played in the 2000 election.
And do you see 2020 like 2016? In many ways, it really came down to rural voters. But do you see the same dynamics at play?
Yeah. So, I think that, Pennsylvania has been seeing kind of a miniature political realignment. There's the famous James Carville quote that, probably a lot of Pennsylvanians cringe at,
And it's very dated. I have to say, Nathaniel, at this point, that goes back decades now.
Exactly. Right. I believe he first made that quote in 1988 when he was working Bob Casey Sr. That things have definitely shifted since then. So, basically, the entire state outside, really southeastern Pennsylvania, has been moving to the right. And you saw that most starkly in 2016 when, especially like northeastern Pennsylvania, which has previously been a pretty good area for Democrats, really went toward Trump, as well as some of the areas in western Pennsylvania outside of Metro Pittsburgh. Basically that trade isn't so good for Democrats. Obviously, they're giving up a lot of their votes in the rural areas while only gaining a few in urban and suburban areas. And so that's made what was a slightly Democratic-leaning state for much of the late 20th century now a arguably Republican-leaning state. Now, the flip side of that, we still see that kind of deepening divide, urban-rural divide, but the flip side of that is that Joe Biden is doing very well overall in the race. President Trump is not very popular nationally, and as a result, Joe Biden is leading by about 7 points nationally. And so, it's like a rising tide lifts all boats kind of situation. Joe Biden doing so well nationally means that he's able to kind of overcome these pro-Republican trends in Pennsylvania. So right now, he leads in the polls in Pennsylvania, but the underlying problem for Democrats, I don't think, is going away.
Well, and there's a brand new poll out from Franklin and Marshall just came out today, as a matter of fact, that among likely voters, Biden leads Trump 48% to 42%, just to put a fine point on what you just said there, Nathaniel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And we at 538, as folks might know, we take the average of polls and kind of issue a prediction based on that. And we currently predict that Biden will beat Trump by 52% to 47%. So not that different from the Franklin and Marshall poll once you kind of add in the undecided voters.
Is it hard to predict things this year for Pennsylvania, for any state?
Yeah, there's a bit of a trade-off. So on one hand, the election is kind of more certain because people have known their opinion of President Trump for 4 years. His approval rating has been very steady. We live in a very polarized environment where people are Democrats or people are Republicans, and there just aren't a lot of swing voters. So that tends to make things pretty predictable. But on the other hand, you also have a lot of turmoil in the news. You have the coronavirus and the ensuing economic recession that, you know, traditionally, obviously, a bad economy is bad for the incumbent president. And, you know, frankly, you know, things could look a lot different even 6 weeks from now in terms of, coronavirus cases and the economy.
Well, there's even fights about, you know, mail-in ballots. We know where the president stands on this. I mean, he basically wants to discredit the ballots that people use if they vote by mail, which, of course, has a track record of being, you know, a extremely clean way of casting your ballot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to certainly be a challenge for states like Pennsylvania that don't have that experience voting by mail. Right. I understand that you're going to get into that later in the program. But yeah, for sure.
Well, let me ask you something else about Pennsylvania, which I think is interesting. In many ways, Democrats have a huge registration advantage, although more people are registering Republican than they have in the past. Nonetheless, there is an advantage for Democrats. The legislature is controlled by the Republican. The governor is a Democrat. We've got one Republican senator, one Democratic senator. Does that also explain why we are this battleground state, in that when you look at least the R&D part of politics, you see it all over the map?
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to voter registration statistics, those I probably wouldn't put a lot of stock into, because the way that you are registered to vote isn't necessarily the way that you identify or that you actually cast your ballot. So I think we see this particularly in parts of Appalachia, where people have been registered Democrats for a long time, but they're kind of Trump Democrats, as it were, and they're really kind of attracted to his like anti-immigration, anti-trade message. But yeah, certainly, you know, the fact that Pennsylvania, you see in a year like 2016, they were able to elect a Republican senator. In a year like 2018, they elected a Democratic senator. It's definitely a state that, depending on which, it's close enough that depending on which political party has the advantage in any given year, Pennsylvania will tend toward that party. And that's kind of why we see it as such, as such an important bellwether for the rest of the nation. That's why we said it was the most important state of 2020, because we're pretty confident that whoever wins Pennsylvania will win the presidency.
I'm interested, and I'm going to be talking later in the show with some of our other guests about this, but there are, and I'm sure in other states as well, but there certainly were in Pennsylvania, voters who voted for President Obama, for Barack Obama, then in 2016, going from Obama to Trump. And I'm just curious, Nathaniel, if you have looked at that particular voter about their change of mind, their change of heart, because it just seems like such a polar opposite decision.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that voters don't necessarily fit into the clean categories that that we often try to put them in. You know, people might be, for example, socially conservative but fiscally liberal. So I think that in particular in 2012, Barack Obama ran a relatively populist campaign. You know, he was running against Mitt Romney, who was he kind of portrayed as this slick businessman, an enemy to, for example, the car companies and things like that. And I think that probably had appeal to the kind of working class white voter that, of course, Trump so famously won in 2016. Mm-hmm. thank you. Okay. But Pennsylvania also, of course, has kind of the opposite kind of voter, which are kind of these maybe fiscally conservative, socially liberal voters in, for example, Chester County, Montgomery County, even Bucks County. And so you are seeing a little bit of those voters starting to trend toward Democrats. The issue is just that they're not as numerous in Pennsylvania as the voters in, for example, rural Western or Northeastern Pennsylvania.
Well, that's interesting that there are not enough suburban voters as there are more rural voters in Western PA.
Right, exactly. So we had an interesting stat from our article, which is that the four collar counties in Philadelphia, so that's Bucks, mm-hmm. Chester, Delaware, and Montgomery, contain 22% of Pennsylvania voters, and Western Pennsylvania minus Pittsburgh contains 19% of voters, mm-hmm. so it's about the same. But the collar counties went from voting for Obama by 10 points to voting for Clinton by 14 points, so slightly more Democratic. But Western Pennsylvania went from voting for Romney by 18 to voting for Trump by 32. So they're just moving in far greater numbers toward the right.
Well, let me ask you about Black voters. And of course, key in Philadelphia and other cities in Pennsylvania, in 96% of Black voters went for Obama, 90% went for Clinton. But you write that that was enough of a difference, that it made a difference.
Yeah, it is. In other states like Wisconsin and Michigan, there was a problem where Democrats weren't turning out enough Black voters, and that actually wasn't the case in Pennsylvania. The turnout rate among Black voters was pretty high. But yeah, that kind of small difference, people often assume, oh, Black voters, they're all Democrats. That's just not true. The vast majority of them are, but there is this difference between 96% and 90% that when you're talking about the state being decided by a margin of only a few thousand votes, it does make the difference.
Here's an email from Dave. Says, how many Trump voters that won't answer polls do you think there are in Pennsylvania? And does your analysis account for this? Is that an issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we at 538 just published an article about this. It requires a little bit of nuance. The polls in 2016 underestimated Trump. That's clear. I think a lot of people assume that that is for the specific reason of Trump voters not picking up the phone. Perhaps they are lying to pollsters about who they support because of what political scientists call social desirability bias, which is that they don't want to admit they're voting for Donald Trump because he's seen as politically incorrect or even racist. There is not a lot of evidence for that latter theory. Trump voters are not quote unquote shy. As anyone I think who has met a Trump voter can tell you.
No, indeed.
So there's really no evidence that they are lying to pollsters, or really that anybody lies to pollsters in any kind of meaningful quantity. That said, pollsters did have methodological problems that resulted in them undercounting Trump voters in 2016. The good news is that I've identified those issues. I think a big one is the fact that they didn't account for whether someone was college educated or not when they were weighting their polls, because Trump's support is much higher among non-college educated people than college educated people. But those problems have been fixed for a lot of pollsters. In addition, there have just been lots of quality checks. So we're certainly more confident in the polls this year. That said, polls are never going to be a precise instrument. If the exact polling number was, I forget what it was exactly, but if it's 49 to 44, I'd be very surprised if, the actual result was exactly 49 to 44, but you can be pretty confident that it'll be within a few percentage points either way. That's what people mean when they talk about a poll's margin of error. Really, a poll is just trying to measure in between those numbers.
Yeah, and I think people often forget that. Nathaniel Rakich, thank you so much for getting our conversation started. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
You're very welcome.
And he's election analyst, author of a report that came out last week on 538. This is Battleground 2020. Much more after this very short break, talking about voting. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Cohen, this is Battleground 2020, our monthly look on Radio Times at Pennsylvania politics this election season, this presidential election season. And as we just heard, Pennsylvania is going to play a key role in this year's fiercely fought race for the White House, which is probably why there have been so many lawsuits. Last week, the state Supreme Court made some key rulings of importance to voters. Ballots will be counted if they are mailed on Election Day, which means the results will not be known on November 3rd. The Green Party presidential candidate was tossed off the ballot. Voters can use drop boxes to return their completed ballots. And if you vote by mail, you must mail your ballot in a second envelope, a so-called secrecy envelope, or your vote will not be counted. Joining us is Vic Volchek. He's legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania, involved in one of these legal challenges. And Vic, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. And also joining us is WHYY political reporter Katie Meyer. And Katie, nice to have you back with us as well. We have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can do it the old-fashioned way. Pick up the phone and call us at 1-888-477-9499. Katie, let me just talk about these so-called naked ballots. And just to be very clear, if you vote by mail in Pennsylvania, you will get two envelopes. The inner one is for your vote, and after you have filled that out, you will put that inner envelope into the outer envelope, the secret envelope, and you will hopefully put a stamp on it and mail it in. It's kind of a two-step process. Why the significance of this ruling, and why such an uproar in response to it?
Sure. So, I mean, I think it's funny. This ruling came about, as you mentioned, in a lawsuit that Democrats had filed. They were seeking, you know, decisions from the court, rulings that they were hoping would, you know, as they said, protect people's rights to vote, make it easier to vote. And so the interpretation that they wanted to see was like sort of a clear, even if the ballot doesn't come back with the secrecy envelope, mm-hmm. it's okay to count it. And so, you know, the secrecy envelope, that's just something that Pennsylvania law requires to be there. That's just how our ballots are constructed. This is all kind of spelled out in the statute. And so the court came back and they said, actually, we think that the law is pretty explicit that the secrecy envelope should, in fact, be mandatory. And so we will not count ballots if they don't have it. And so the reason this is significant, because as I said, it was already in law that these things should be there.
Right.
But cities had been, and different municipalities had been interpreting this differently. And so Philadelphia, for instance, which gets, you know, it's a big county, a lot of mail-in ballots, they had been, as a matter of course, processing any ballots that came back without the secrecy envelope, as long as they were sealed in, like, the outer envelope. We should just say the secrecy envelope, that's the one that, like, you might, if you voted by mail, you've seen it before. It sure. doesn't have postage on it. It just says, like, you know, ballot, secret ballot or something on it. And then you put your ballot into that envelope. Then you put it into the bigger envelope. That's the one with, you know, the prepaid postage and the address of your polling place and everything, or your county elections office. So anyway, counties had been kind of making up their own minds about whether to accept ballots without secrecy envelopes. This would change that. So right. now they will have to discard them if the secrecy envelope is not there. And that's where these concerns come in. You know, you heard Philadelphia say, statewide, they were basing this on the numbers of ballots they'd gotten in the past that didn't have the envelopes that they had counted. They kind of extrapolated that out and said, we could be looking at 100,000 ballots across the state that now might not be counted.
Vic, let me get you in on the conversation. How do you see this? I mean, on the one hand, you can say, and perhaps this is more my opinion than anything else, which is it really so hard to put one envelope inside of another? But do you see this as a problem for voters in Pennsylvania?
I do. I think it's one that's overcomable by education, but I do think it's a problem. Let me just make clear that the ACLU represented a number of groups, including Common Cause and Make the Road and League of Women Voters, in that Supreme Court litigation. And we took the position, the same position that the Secretary of State took, which is that ballots should be counted regardless of whether that envelope is included. It's really mm-hmm. important to understand that that envelope, that secrecy envelope, it's supposed to promote privacy. That's the only thing it does. It doesn't in any way affect the integrity of the ballot. It doesn't in any way hamper election officials' ability to ensure that it is actually an eligible voter who's casting that. And in many states where you have these mail-in ballot laws, they don't use secrecy envelopes at all. These things are usually counted by large sorting machines. Nobody's going to see it. So, you know, in terms of protecting electoral integrity, this makes no sense. The reason I'm concerned is that it's not just that some people forget to put it into the envelope. They may put some stray markings on that envelope or on the ballot. And the law is very clear that if you have markings on there, that's another reason that your ballot is going to not be counted. And so there are more pitfalls when you vote by mail than when you're there in person. Like when you're there in person and you're going to sign the wrong line, you got the poll worker there to say, no, here. You know, so there are actually, you know, I think some serious concerns about people not filling these out properly and then not having their ballots counted.
Katie, an email from Philip says, no stamp is needed. The ballot is prepaid. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. And that was, I believe, the result of a different ruling. But yes, so when I say postage is on it, that just means like you'll see on the envelope, you know, this little square that says prepaid postage. You don't have to put a stamp on it.
Fair enough. But is it also, and this is probably gets a little more partisan, Katie, but the Democrats, it looks like, are more likely to vote by mail than Republicans. So does this have a kind of a partisan tinge to it?
Yeah. I mean, these questions about voting and who votes how, they always end up with a partisan tinge, correctly or incorrectly. There have been studies that show like this stuff kind of doesn't stack up. But the perception here is, yes, that Democrats are going to vote by mail more than Republicans will. And that has been borne out, especially because mail-in voting is going to be so common now. That has been borne out in polling. Republicans are more likely to say they don't trust mail-in voting. But, you know, that's on the rise with Democrats, too, as all of this confusion sort of mounts and all these kind of different changes happen to how the process is going to work. I'll also say, you know, this is kind of a dynamic that goes back a long time, and it's not just limited to mail-in voting. There has been, I think, a conception among Republicans and Democrats that more voting, you know, is good for Democrats and less voting is good for Republicans. That maybe sounds like a controversial thing to say, but like that's like the conventional wisdom on it. So there have been rulings in the past, you know, keeping Republicans or saying that Republicans, for instance, have to seek approval if they want to do, quote unquote, ballot security measures or electoral security measures. And that goes back to this idea among Republicans that if fewer people vote, or they, you know, as they would say, protect the integrity of the election, that the result will be, you know, more pure, i.e. better for them. So, I mean, I don't want to get too much into talking about people's motivations here, but there is sort of a perception that goes back a long way about this.
Yeah, and one can see that pretty clearly. Vic, let me go back to you, and then we got a lot of people with some questions and comments as well. I just want to toss out a couple of other things that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did last week, basically that the deadline can be extended for returning ballots, so you can mail in your ballot on November 3rd, which is Election Day, which means that the results will not be known probably that night. Can you speak to that? Also, the status of drop boxes.
Yeah, so yes. And so the ruling is that you have to have your ballot in the mail by 8 o'clock on election night. And as long as it's received by Friday, the elections offices are supposed to count that. Let me note that the Republican Senate has indicated, or Republican senators have indicated, that they will ask the U.S. Supreme Court to review that decision. So, you know, there may be more said on that particular issue. But I mean, the reason for extending it, and again, ACLU supported that extension, is that we've seen problems with the Postal Service, and especially in some critical areas like Philadelphia or Allentown, there have been significant slowdowns. And so it created this odd situation where you could follow the rules, get your ballot on time, put it in the mail on time, and because of delays in the mail, your vote would come in late and therefore not be counted. So, you know, giving the 3-day cushion is really important. In terms of drop boxes, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said that these drop boxes are authorized under Pennsylvania law. The Trump campaign has been arguing that they are not. The drop boxes are really, just for people who might not be familiar with them, they're like mailboxes. They're like the drop boxes you might put library books in or utility bills or tax payments at your township office, except you put a ballot in. And the importance of these is that they are picked up directly by the Board of Elections. And so you bypass the Postal Service, right, and bypass the possibilities of either loss or delay in the mail, and it gets delivered right away. Again, let me say there is major litigation brought by the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee that's pending in federal court in Pittsburgh. They are still challenging the use of these drop boxes, and it's, you know, it's hard for me to see a real good constitutional challenge to that, and even harder to see that any court would say, hey, anybody who's already voted by a drop box, that ballot won't count. But that litigation is ongoing.
Fair enough. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Vic Volchek, legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. Also with us, Katie Meyer, political reporter for WHYY. We are talking about voting in Pennsylvania, part of our Battleground 2020 series, looking at the role that Pennsylvania is playing this presidential election season. Let me just toss one quick thing to you, Katie. I know there was a debate in the legislature having to do with when votes can be counted or not. I believe the Democrats wanted the vote counting to begin a couple days before November 3rd. What is the status on that? Do you know?
The status of that is probably not happening. So what happened was Republicans inserted a provision into the law that would have extended what they call, the processing of the ballots, canvassing. And they were trying to effectively ban drop boxes. And so Governor Wolf, a Democrat, said he would not sign that. And so we're still kind of at loggerheads here. I think they're technically working on it, but it's looking less likely that there's going to be a resolution.
Someone from Bristol left a comment. Why are there so many changes happening so close to the election? It's causing a lot of confusion. And I would completely agree with that, Katie. Is it just sort of bare, raw politics that we're seeing on display?
It's an unusual election because of the pandemic, because of states like Pennsylvania dramatically expanding mail voting and then really encouraging people to use them because of mail delays, because of all these factors. One of the big reasons that there's been so much back and forth is there've been a lot of lawsuits. And so that just means, you know, Vic mentioned, you know, right now, again, just to kind of lay it out again, we had this big state Supreme Court ruling, which is now being petitioned to be appealed by the Republicans in Pennsylvania up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then we also have this related federal ruling out in Pittsburgh, or federal case out in Pittsburgh, that's seeking to do a lot of the same things. I mean, this is all just, it's a big pile of litigation, and that's not even all of it. So that is why we're seeing so much back and forth. And that's also one of the reasons why, you know, after Election Day, there may be a lot of questions about the outcome. I think we're going to see probably some more litigation after that. That's not to scare anybody. That's not to say, like, we're never going to have a result. That's just to say, you know, it's a very litigious election. And so that is why we are seeing so many rule changes.
And Vic, just to add to that, President Trump said yesterday that he wouldn't promise a peaceful transition come November. We're going to have to see what happens, is what he said in answer to a question about will he abide by the results of the election. Do you anticipate then some pretty tough fights over election results come November, maybe even December?
Yeah, I do.
Vic, go ahead, and then I'll read some more comments as well.
Sure.
Yeah, I think anybody who heard that or hears that now should find that quite chilling. I mean, here is a president of the United States saying that he will not live by the vote, not live up to the vote. And I mean, this is truly frightening. I do think there's going to be litigation. I mean, for folks who want to get terrified, there's an article by Barton Gellman in this week's Atlantic sort of paints that whole scenario. It's worth looking at. You know, one point I want to stress here, Terry, we were talking before about how the fact that you can return your ballot by Friday in the mail, which means that we're not going to have results on Election Day. Regardless of what happens with that extension, we're not going to have results on Election Day here in Pennsylvania because they won't allow the county boards of elections to count before 7 a.m. on Election Day. There is no way they're going to count 3 million ballots in a single day. And so, I mean, it could take a week. I mean, people should be thinking 7 to 10 days at this point that we're not going to actually have a result in the Pennsylvania election. And that doesn't mean that there's any kind of problems going on. What it means is that the legislature has hamstrung the boards of elections, they simply can't count all those votes in that time period.
I'll just jump in.
Go ahead, Katie.
Vic's point is very good. And just to kind of stress this again, we know there are going to be delays. So if it is election night and you're like, oh my gosh, we're not going to have results in Pennsylvania, you know, don't worry. Like, that is expected. The counting takes time. You know, in Philadelphia and a lot of the collar counties, they have plans now to count 24 hours a day, starting on election day and going until whenever. So just, again, it's going to take a long time. There's a lot of mail-in ballots. They can't pre-canvass them. So that is why.
A lot of comments here and no time to really do justice to them. Robert says, will the counting of absentee ballots in the county election offices in the days after Election Day be live streamed by each county so the public can see it as it unfolds? Katie, quickly, is that an option?
I would have to ask the counties individually, but usually there is quite a lot of transparency that happens with this stuff. And so, for instance, like opposition parties can go in and watch the counting. So I don't think it's out of the question. I can certainly raise that question with them.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good one. A comment from Chris, will the ballots have to be sealed to count? Vic, can you take that?
Sealed in the envelope. I don't believe they have to be sealed in the secrecy envelope, but I'm not absolutely positive. I do know that you have to have them in the secrecy envelope after the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling, and you got to be very sure that you don't scribble notes, you know, your grocery list on there the day before, and then think that your ballot's going to be counted. That ballot has to be, or the envelope has to be pristine.
Well, we're almost out of
time. I would say you should seal it just to be safe.
Yeah, I was going to say it's always a good idea to seal whatever you put in the mails. Very quickly, Vic, if you don't mind, in fact, we got about 20 seconds. Why was the Green Party presidential candidate tossed from the ballot? Is there a short answer?
My understanding is they didn't have enough petition signatures.
To meet the criteria to get on the ballot.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, I can see, and I've said this before, and anytime we talk about voting in 2020, we need to spend more than just 20 minutes on some of the specifics. Nonetheless, Vic Volchek, legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. And Katie Meyer, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
She is political reporter for WHYY. She's going to be filling in on Radio Times in just a couple of weeks. Coming up, we'll be talking about rural voters in Pennsylvania, part of our Battleground 2020 series. Stay with us. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. This is
supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Battleground 2020, our monthly look on Radio Times at the role Pennsylvania is playing in this year's presidential race. In 2016, Donald Trump eked out a victory over Hillary Clinton in large part because of rural voters in Pennsylvania who put him over the top. In fact, Erie County in northwestern PA went from blue to red 4 years ago with Obama supporters voting for Trump. We asked Joseph Morris to join us. He's associate professor, chair of the Department of Political Science at Mercyhurst University, which is in Erie. He also directs the Center for Applied Politics. Joseph Morris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Julia Taruso, and she's presidential election reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She has been talking with rural voters, wrote a fascinating story about the residents of Norvelt, a small town in western PA that was known back in the day as Communism on the Prairie and has been all in for President Trump. Julia Taruso, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much, Marty.
And to our listeners, as always, join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Joseph, let me begin with you just with a kind of a broad question. I think when talking about Pennsylvania presidential politics, there's a lot of focus on suburban voters. The collar county is around Philadelphia, which is where we are. But I think the rural voters have played such an important role, and we need to understand what's happening in other parts of the state. Can you give us a kind of a broad-based assessment about how you see things in rural Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I mean, in this election cycle, it's going to be a lot like 2016, it appears, and that in the sense that rural voters are likely going to determine whether Pennsylvania ends up red or blue. About half of all the votes cast in 2016 came from those suburban and urban counties, just about seven of them total. But what decided the election really was what was going on out there in those rural counties where Donald Trump managed to run up the totals, his margin, and get those 44,000 extra votes he needed to triumph over Hillary Clinton. So I think this year, like 2016, those rural voters are going to be incredibly important.
Well, and as you look around your part of Pennsylvania, I guess lawn signs is one way to see how people feel about the candidates. Who's winning in the lawn sign argument?
Sure, sure. And lawn signs, as we all know, are not a great way to determine who's going to win an election. But in the year of the coronavirus, you take what you can get. Erie County is basically divided in half by I-90. And on the north side of the county, you have a more urban population. And on the south side, you have a more rural population. And Erie County looks today, I think, a lot like the rest of the state. The northern side of the county, the more urban and suburban side, is clearly, I think, in Biden's column. The enthusiasm among Democrats is something you can see everywhere you go. But south of I-90 in the rural areas, there are very few signs that Joe Biden is making any sort of inroads. Donald Trump seems to be really doing well, as he is in the rest of the state in rural areas.
Well, that's so interesting that this rural-urban divide, I guess we shouldn't be surprised about that. Julia, let me turn to you, and I really enjoyed the story that you did about Norvelt in southwestern PA. This was a town, a community that was built under the government of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, so going back almost 100 years. Tell us about this town of Norvelt.
Sure. Thank you so much. Well, I was first interested in it because first of all, it's in Westmoreland County, which was a county that was shifting more Republican even before, you know, Donald Trump became a political candidate. But it's also the county that saw the largest increase in Republican registrations. I think in the past 4 years, they've added about 10,000 Republicans in that county. And Norvelt stuck out because, you know, we hear so much about this election has become, at least in Trump's framing, this like battle against socialism. And Norvelt is a town that was actually founded during the Depression with this government program to help out of work coal miners. And now it is, I mean, it's a small town. So I drove up and down every street I could find and played that lawn sign game and did not see a single Biden sign, saw a lot of Trump signs. And just talked to voters there about kind of this shift that was obviously a long time in the making.
Well, and it was, I thought your conversations with the residents of Norvelt were really interesting and largely Trump supporters. It's almost 100% white community, but they talked about their fears. What are they afraid of?
Yeah, a lot of them are, you know, I think in a lot of these areas that we saw shift from Democrat to Republican or Obama voters to Trump voters, there were already some very conservative values in those places. So they're genuinely afraid that their guns are going to be taken away. This is a very pro-gun rights area. They express fears despite being, you know, an hour away from a major city of what they're seeing on the news, what Trump is telling them, that, you know, their towns and cities could burn if these protests get out of hand, which, you know, is something of a mischaracterization of what's actually happening. I think, you know, in a lot of these smaller places where Trump has really tapped into something, they are smaller, whiter, older areas where people are kind of afraid of this other or this unknown, you know, entity, protesters, socialism. Sometimes it's hard for them to articulate exactly what the fear is.
Right. Immigrants. I mean, there was some concern about immigrants mm-hmm. taking jobs. Joseph, let me go back to you. And just this is a more, I guess, psychological, sociological, philosophical question, but having to do with this divide that you see. And we're trying to understand rural voters, knowing, of course, they're not a monolith, but rural voters in Pennsylvania and the appeal of Donald Trump to those voters. And is it this worry about a loss of life, a loss of identity, seeing a much more diverse country happening in front of their eyes?
Yeah, you know, I think Julie really captured a lot of that. There is this sort of generalized anxiety about the future. I mean, in places outside of the major metropolitan areas, there's been some significant economic transformations that have also included significant social transformations. And all of it has created a great deal of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Donald Trump has done really well is promise rural voters that he's going to stop that. He's going to essentially shut it down and help Pennsylvania and places like it return to the way of life that they are most comfortable with. And I think that's been a really effective strategy, not just in Pennsylvania, but it's been that way in Michigan and Minnesota and Wisconsin. He's done really well with it.
Well, and are you talking about this has been a real thing, the loss of manufacturing jobs, the loss of, you know, jobs associated with the energy industry. Is that what, Joseph, is that what people are concerned about or living through?
I think it is. It's hard to overstate the impact that the change, the transformation of the economy over the past several years has had on small and mid-sized cities. I mean, these cities have been absolutely decimated in Pennsylvania, and only now are some of them beginning to kind of claw their way out of this hole that they found themselves in. So I think the message that Donald Trump has been communicating has been highly effective. Because what these rural voters want is a sense of security and a return to those days that they once had, that their fathers and mothers enjoyed decades ago.
Well, in fact, to you, Julia, you interviewed a guy, Jim Naranti, who talked about keeping the country the way it is. He says, we're not vicious. We want what was or was ours.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. I heard a lot, you know, and I think a lot of times we talk about kind of these areas where coal mining or industry have gone away and there's a lot of kind of economic depression. Norvelt is actually a pretty nice place to live right now. You know, people are doing pretty well. And I think I heard a lot of what you just mentioned from Jim, kind of this desire to return to the good old days when, you know, everybody knew each other. And I think some of that is actually a reflection of how divided everyone feels right now. But I think in addition to some of the economic fears, I heard a lot about cancel culture. I heard a lot about, you know, I would ask, oh, you know, do you really think Joe Biden would make this a socialist country? And a lot of people mentioned AOC and Bernie Sanders to me, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And I think a lot of it is also, I asked folks where they get their news, and it was almost overwhelmingly Fox. And I think a lot of Trump's messaging, a lot of the more conservative news messaging is really kind of echoed in a lot of these places.
Let me read a couple of comments. One from Janet from Columbia County says it's dangerous to put out Biden signs, but there are supporters in a lot of rural areas. Joseph, can you speak to that?
Yeah, there are. I think in a lot of these counties that Donald Trump managed to win in 2016, there were Democratic votes to be gotten. And I think that was large. The fact that they did not get those votes was due in large measure to errors that the Clinton campaign made. Unfortunately for Joe Biden, I am not confident that they are not making the same errors. They're treating some of these cities as flyover cities when they should be there. There are votes to be gotten.
Like Erie, like the, you know, other sort of smaller cities in Pennsylvania, instead of focusing on Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, those smaller cities in the middle?
Absolutely. And as I said a few minutes ago, this election is likely to be very close. It's going to be measured in, I like to say, centimeters, not even inches. And in elections like that, every single vote matters. If he can decrease, if Joe Biden can decrease Donald Trump's margin of victory in these rural counties, he's likely to win the state. If he does not, then we're going to see a repeat of 2016.
Julia, you've written about a lot of parts of Pennsylvania this election season, and I wonder, is there too much focus on, let's say, suburban voters and suburban women voters? We're talking obviously about rural voters and speaking in broad terms, but is there enough attention paid to rural voters in Pennsylvania?
I'm not sure there is. I mean, I think that, like Joe just mentioned, you know, this election is going to be so close, and you kind of, there's a lot of focus on each candidate turning out his base. And so that's why, you know, we focus on the suburbs and if Trump can make any inroads there, and we focus on the city and whether the city will turn out. I think the other important aspect of kind of this rural voter concept is those more purple areas where, you know, you're seeing maybe in small cities protests pop up in really more rural areas, and some people saying that there is some Democratic, actually like ultra progressive energy there in these really kind of very red places. And what that'll mean in November is another thing I'm really interested in.
Joe, you sent us some notes, and you did talk about the fact that you do see Black Lives Matter, signs as well as Trump signs. So it's not as if they're just Trump signs as far as the eye can see.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, here in Erie County and the surrounding counties, those that I travel through most often, it's not uncommon to find a Black Lives Matter sign, a sign in support of the protests that have been occurring in places you wouldn't expect to find them. And it wouldn't be worth talking about if there were just, say, one or two of these, but they're – you see them fairly frequently. And that's why I think that it's so important that in these final weeks, if the Democrats want to win Pennsylvania, which I think they have to do to win the presidency, those votes are there to get, and there's more of them. And I think they really need to focus on those in the final weeks.
And has Joe Biden or frankly, Donald Trump, have they come to Erie?
No, we've seen Jill Biden. We haven't seen Joe Biden.
And I wonder to you, Julia, just when you talk to the people living in Norvelt, are they engaged? Are they, as you mentioned, you know, watching a lot of Fox News, are they enthused? Are they ready to go to the polls and vote?
Oh, hugely. I think
hugely. Yeah.
you know, I mean, there were blocks where everybody had a Trump flag. I also was talking to voters just the day before Trump did a rally in Latrobe near Pittsburgh. And so I think, you know, President Trump is going to where his base is, and he's having these large scale rallies, and he's pumping up, you know, people who probably were going to vote for him anyway. But I talked to a lot of people who said, you know, supporting Trump is kind of beyond the, you know, the political reasons people feel connected to him. It's sort of in fashion. It's what all their neighbors are doing. It's, you know, the Trump rally becomes like a big tailgate waiting to get in. So there's a lot of excitement in these places. And I think, you know, that's a reason we haven't seen much movement away from Trump in terms of the base he had in 2016.
Well, Julia Taruso, Joseph Mars, thanks for rounding out our hour talking about Pennsylvania as a battleground state. Julia Taruso, presidential election reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Julia, thanks for coming back on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And Joseph Morris is associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Mercyhurst University. That's in Erie, Pennsylvania. He directs the Center for Applied Politics. And Joseph Morris, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Aarons, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.